Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. Let's begin with today's top story. The first headline reads, Mahomet Development, Entertainment Hub Coming to Commercial Subdivision, Bowling Alley, etc., slated for spot near planned Country Inn and Suites Hotel. This article is written by Jana Wiersema. She can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Mahomet. Next up for Mahomet's booming east side, a 17,000 square foot entertainment center near the northeast corner of South Prairie View Road and US 150 that will include bowling, arcade games, a sports bar, and a full-service restaurant. Mahomet-based Tabling Development Company, that's T-A-B-E-L-I-N-G, Development Company, announced the news Monday, stating that the project is part of its Prairie View Commons commercial subdivision. The entertainment center will be located south of the planned Country Inn and Suites Hotel and just north of US 150, said General Manager Austin Tabling. The combination of the hotel and the entertainment facility will definitely have mutual benefit, he said. Both properties will have increased exposure. The hotel will benefit from having attractions nearby, and the entertainment facility will have out-of-area guests staying 100 feet away. He told the News Gazette that the entertainment center is currently in the pre-construction phase and was unable to give a groundbreaking estimate at this time, though he hopes to have a general idea in the coming months. According to Tabling Development's announcement, design work is currently underway. The developer recently closed on a land sale with the business's owners, who are choosing to stay anonymous at this time. We made a connection with the owner's broker in August of last year and have been working with them on this since then, Tabling said. We closed on the lots this past Friday, which was a big milestone for the project. Tabling Development, which also developed the Vision South Commercial Center in Mahomet, shared its plans to create the 10-acre Prairie View Commons commercial subdivision in February of 2024. It was announced in December of that same year that a 71-room hotel would be built in the subdivision. Tabling Development said that the entertainment center, along with the hotel, is part of a vision to position the subdivision as a regional hospitality and entertainment hub. We don't have a groundbreaking date set for the hotel yet, but the pre-construction phase is moving along well, and we anticipate having updates soon, Tabling said. He noted that two lots have been sold to the entertainment center, and one has been sold to the hotel, leaving four available. Tabling Development Company continues to work with additional prospective businesses interested in the subdivision's remaining lots, with further announcements expected in the coming months, officials said. And there's two photographs that accompany this article. One is of kind of a land map overview of the lot that they're going to be building on. The caption reads, a map of Tabling Development's Prairie View Commons subdivision, which is set to include a Country Inn and Suites on Lot G and an entertainment center with bowling alley, sports bar, restaurant, and arcade games on Lots B and C. That photo is provided. And then there is a photograph, a larger photograph that was previously a rendering. And this is an overhead view of the open kind of space and field with the highway around it. The caption reads, a drone shot of the northeast corner of South Prairie View Road and a US 150 in Mahomet. Future site of a development, including a Country Inn and Suites Hotel and an entertainment center with a bowling alley, arcade, sports bar, and more. Next up, Champaign Schools. District's priority projects revealed. Lack of middle school classroom space among issues. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio. who can be reached by email at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. After 6 months of meetings, open houses, and hearing from experts, Unit 4's 27-person facilities committee presented its list of the most pressing needs to the district's new leadership team at Monday night's school board meeting. So that was 6 months of meetings. Now comes the tricky part, figuring out what to prioritize and how to pay for it all. The one-hour meeting ended without any formal recommendation to the school board from new superintendent Giovanni Ponce on direction for the facilities team. Amy Armstrong, one of two board members on the committee, said she hoped that would happen in the coming weeks. Nor was there any mention of costs surrounding any of the priority projects. This wasn't the meeting for that, said Elizabeth Stegmeier, Unit 4's Director of Capital Planning and Projects. The committee did identify what Stegmeier whittled down to three high-priority issues for her department: addressing state-mandated health life safety repairs at International Prep Academy, which must be addressed by 2029, and Garden Hills Academy, which must be addressed by 2030. Here's some other items: improving facilities for special education, removing the portable classrooms outside the district's two overcapacity middle schools, Franklin and Jefferson, and providing high-quality educational facilities and opportunities for all middle school students. Middle schools. As a landscape architect with a background in capital planning, Bridget Moen's preference is to reconfigure buildings to make the best use out of every nook and cranny. That's just not possible at the two middle schools, which weren't part of the nine-figure referendum voters signed off on in 2016. It was really clear that no amount of moving students around Tetris across the district or completing minor renovations was going to help address some of those capacity issues in the short or long term for the district, she said. The argument for building a fourth standalone middle school, a topic of debate around the district in recent years but not mentioned Monday night, got a bump from the committee's presentation. Citing the district's 2024 space utilization study, BLDD architects Damian Schlitt showed that Franklin STEAM Academy was at 112% capacity, with Jefferson Middle School close behind at 102%. Even Edison, which was updated as part of the 2016 referendum, didn't have much wiggle room at 95%. "We simply need more square footage," Schlitt said. Other issues specific to Franklin, built in 1953, and Jefferson, 1960. Both buildings have a lot of outstanding and aging systems due for update and repair, Schlitt said. During a presentation by the district's teaching and learning team, Schlitt said the committee also learned that these buildings were simply not designed to support the middle school model that it utilized today, which relies on multiple grade-level teams versus the more familiar junior high or high school departmental mode that you might think about. Special education. The consultant hired to audit all things special education in Unit 4 found plenty to fix, issuing a 90-page summary with 100-plus recommendations last year. Much of what was mentioned prominently in Dan Cates's, C-A-T-E-S's, report was a focus of the facilities committee, which proposed broad solutions for each level of student. Elementary schools, the emphasis would be on clustering services but in a way that aligns with middle school feeder patterns, Schlitt said. This would ensure elevated programming in K-5, but also avoid the need to push the student to a different middle school. Middle schools more. Programs would be expanded and aligned to receive elementary students, Schlitt said, ensuring that functional life skills spaces are available to support autism, transitional program students. Essential skills and emotional disability rooms are in place and available for those students, all the while providing equitable facilities for each program type across the middle schools. High schools, the goal, Schlitt said, is to cluster multiple life skills programs at either Central or Centennial and do the same with essential skills programming at the other high school. Said Schlitt, the proposed solution for special education allows us to ensure that continuum of care, but specific needs related to the elementary, middle school, and high school level are all divergent in the way they work. Health life safety. At both Garden Hills and IPA's older building on Kirby Avenue, code violations uncovered in a 2024 health life safety survey are too significant to address within the available dollars that the district has for capital improvements or maintenance, Stegmeier said. At Garden Hills, she said, the heating and cooling system is so out of date that the maintenance department can no longer find parts for it. They're buying things off eBay. They're patching things together. If a room goes down, there's no redundancy in the system such that you could tie into another portion of the system to get that classroom back up and running. At IPA, Stegmeier said, the smaller building that sits in front of the 2022 elementary school and houses students in grades 6 through 8 needs new everything. A roof, heating system, floor, tiles, and more. To replace all those things is a significant cost, and it wouldn't improve the layout of the space to the way that we teach middle school students today, she added. The committee's recommendations: replace the heating and cooling system at Garden Hills and at IPA, demolish the smaller building, it also has asbestos, and build an addition onto the elementary school which it was designed for. In other news, Southside Elementary is getting its principal back. At Monday's meeting, the board unanimously approved the appointment of Christian Mahone for a role he held from 2019 to 2025 before leaving to become athletic director at Central. Mahone, who succeeds Eliza Brooks as principal, thanked the school community for their support and the board for the opportunity to come back to what I call home. He starts Tuesday. Also debuting Tuesday, Unit 4 Connect, a community feedback and support platform accessible through champagneschools.org, that Ponce described Monday as a place for everyone in Champaign to celebrate success, share an idea, share a concern, or ask a simple question. That's Unit 4 Connect. Users are not required to give their name, and it will be available to speakers of any language, said Ponce, who repeated that last part in his native Spanish. Whatever language you speak, he said, we will be listening. Next up, the next headline reads, it's actually a large photograph front and center of today's paper. As heard on WDWS, Talkin' Baseball. There's a man, Caucasian male, in the foreground, who is a disc jockey, DJ. He's talking into a microphone, and in the background, he's looking at a team of baseball players. Boy baseball players in uniform, orange and black, and they're smiling, and I guess they're standing in front of microphones. They're guests on the radio show. The caption reads, Little Leaguer Cam Fisher, 12, answers questions during his appearance on the News Gazette Sports Page radio program on WDWS AM. Fisher and his state-bound CU All-Star teammates visited the newsroom and talked baseball on two radio shows on Monday, a day after winning their district tournament in Champaign. The team's state tournament opener is Saturday. Good luck to them. That photo is provided, taken, by Rob Lacates for the News Gazette. Visit our website for podcasts of the News Gazette sports page and News Gazette radio powered by GTPS Insurance, as well as photographer Rob Lacates' gallery from Monday's newsroom visit. Next up, sentencing hearing. Weapons charge nets Champaign man 12 years. This article is written by Luke Taylor. Luke can be reached by email at ltaylor@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. An investigation into a November 2024 shootout at a North Champaign apartment complex has resulted in a 12-year prison sentence for a Champaign man who was allegedly involved. Cayente Jones Weatherall, 31, was charged with four counts of being an armed habitual criminal. He pleaded guilty to one of the counts. A Champaign detective brought by Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson to Jones Weatherall's sentencing hearing Monday said that police were first called at 7:43 p.m. November 24th, 2024, to the Oakwood Trace Apartments for a report of a shooting. Investigators found two groupings of bullet casings on scene, which, combined with witness accounts, led them to believe that a shootout had occurred between multiple parties. The detective said that judging by the casings found, four firearms were involved, so they believed four people were involved. 26 of the casings were determined to have been fired by a rifle, which a witness said belonged to someone riding a bicycle. A cell phone found at the scene was determined to belong to Jones Weatherall, who admitted being present but said he was not involved in the incident. Later, police searched Jones Weatherall's apartment and found five firearms, as well as around 400 grams of cannabis, scales, and packaging material. A rifle found during the search was sent to the Illinois State Police Lab, where it was determined to be the weapon that fired the 26 rounds found at the scene of the shootout. Jones Weatherall was charged with involvement in that incident, but that case was dismissed as part of his plea agreement on the weapons charges. Larson still presented all of the information about both cases as evidence in aggravation at the sentencing hearing, requesting a 20-year sentence for Jones Weatherall. In a previous incident, Jones Weatherall had been struck by gunfire and someone close to him had died, while others shot at them during a party. His defense attorney, Deborah Neeson, said he still has bullets lodged in him from that incident, and he owns firearms because, as she said, was demonstrated again in the shootout, other people were attacking him. Larson said the rifle was clearly not a defensive weapon. Neeson also spoke to Jones Weatherall's plans for the future and goal of running his own food truck. The defendant also spoke for himself, saying he wants to get out in time to be a father to his six children and two stepchildren. "Doing the time is not just hurting me, it's hurting them," Jones Weatherall said. He said he enjoys cooking and is passionate about connecting with the community that way, but once he gets out of prison, he will leave Champaign to escape circumstances he feels are drawing him back into more problems. "I can't get this time back, but I can take the time ahead of me," he said. Champaign County Judge Matt Lee settled on the 12-year sentence, but warned Jones Weatherall that he needed to find the right ways to care for his family rather than repeatedly getting in trouble. He has served multiple prison sentences for drug and weapon charges before. The answer to shooting incidents, Lee said, cannot be that everyone starts carrying guns around regardless of the law, because then we're just done as a society. He told Jones Weatherall that he clearly has potential. "You obviously have the ability to make a life for yourself and your family," Lee said. Jones Weatherall left the courtroom to a chorus of "I love you" from family members present for the hearing. The next headline reads, from Top of the Morning, the article by Jim Rosso, "Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso." And remember, questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email Jim Rosso at JROSSOW@newsgazette.com. Ezra Elliott continues to make Hoopston proud. An IHSA wrestling champion in 2019, the Corn Jerker legend won his UFC debut on Saturday night in Oklahoma City. "It's the best thing ever," said his uncle, Dave Elliott, who watched on Paramount Plus from his home in Hoopston. "The whole town's pulling for him. There are a lot of people here who have supported him since high school." Ezra's parents, Amanda and John, made the 12-hour drive from Hoopston to Oklahoma City to watch their son beat Damian Anderson by unanimous decision. Afterward, Ezra said, "I'm just a hardworking kid from a small town." "Exactly," Hoopston Police Chief Chris Kelnhofer said. Ezra's coach at Hoopston area, Kelnhofer, had an inkling he'd do big things at the professional level because of a work ethic that is unmatched. "We gave him the tools, but he built what he is. There's no one more self-motivated," he said. It's amazing to see him make it at that level. Ezra, a two-time News Gazette all-area wrestler who went 41-0 in 2019, has yet to lose as a pro. "I'll be a household name," he said Saturday. And there's a picture of two men, a younger man and an older man, but not old. Hoopston's Ezra Elliott and his uncle Dave Elliott a guiding force during his wrestling journey. And then there's two photographs of Ezra in wrestling uniforms. One is in a red one where he's kind of squatting and facing the camera, and the other one is live from a tournament, and looks like he is winning the tournament, and he's celebrating with his arms up. Next up, well, congratulations to him. And next up, history. Area history. In 1926, Otis G. Hawk, a prominent retired farmer and lifelong resident of Champaign County, hanged himself on the loft of his barn in St. Joseph. In his hat were three notes, one indicating his choice of undertaker, and the other two explaining the financial troubles that drove him to suicide. Hawk, son of the late Isaac and Mary Hawk, was born on a farm southeast of Urbana on May 5, 1867. He and his wife, Ada, had a single child, Charles, who died at age 19. That's a little bleak. Let's move on. In 1976, University of Illinois Chancellor J.W. Pelteson presented the University Board of Trustees with a special $104 million capital construction program Tuesday, which is designed to increase the university's contribution to the solution of the world food problem. The program, to be completed by 1963, would involve 21 buildings, including some completely new facilities and remodeling and additions to existing structures. Excuse me, in 2011, at a meeting, Dynegy Inc., D-Y-N-E-G-Y Inc., officials agreed to send the Vermilion Fishing Club a proposal to keep the campground open under certain conditions the club would have to meet. Members must clear out the campground by October 1st, returning to its natural state, meaning all campers, permanent buildings, and other structures that have been brought in or built in the last 50 years must be removed. In international history, today's highlight. On July 21, 1925, the so-called monkey trial ended in Dayton, Tennessee, with John T. Scopes found guilty of violating state law for teaching Darwin's theory of evolution. The conviction was later overturned. That was 1925. Also on this date, in 1861, during the Civil War, the first Battle of Bull Run was fought at Manassas, Virginia, resulting in a Confederate victory. In 1944, American forces landed on Guam during World War II, capturing it from the Japanese some 3 weeks later. In 1954, the Geneva Conference concluded with accords dividing Vietnam into northern and southern entities. And in 1969, Apollo 21 astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin blasted off from the moon aboard the ascent stage of the lunar module for docking with the command module. The next headline reads, Champaign County Board, vote set to fill District 6 seat. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached by email at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. The Champaign County Board is set to vote Thursday on appointing China Figueroa Dixon to fill the vacant District 6 seat, previously held by Samantha Carter. Carter announced at the board's June 18th meeting that she would be stepping down. She said that she has had a wonderful partnership with a cosmetology program that she will be working with, and also feels that the board has, among other things, quote-unquote, lost focus. I find myself scratching my head a lot of times after I leave here, she said. And so I'm in a good mental space. I'm resigning as of this meeting, or this evening. I just look back and I thought, once I joined this board, this is a group of people that want to change the community and stand up for what's right. And that has not been the case. I'm looking at a lot of emotional, unstable creatures that have lost focus of the reason for being here. If appointed, Figueroa Dixon will fill Carter's seat only through November 30th. The remaining 2 years of Carter's term, originally set to end November 30th, 2028, will be filled by someone else, the winner of a special election to be held this November. Figueroa Dixon is already running to fill the board's other district District 6 seat, which is currently held by Denise Arras. Figueroa Dixon defeated Ryan Musgrove in the Democratic primary and is not facing any Republican competition at this time. The board's agenda for Thursday night also includes a resolution honoring Carter for her 5 years of service on the board. And there's a photograph of Carter and a photograph of Figueroa Dixon. The next headline reads, Vermilion County Court. Danville man pleads not guilty to sexual abuse. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey, who can be reached by email at jbailey@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Danville. A former Danville School District employee pleaded not guilty Monday to charges that he sexually abused a minor. Jordan Ritchie, 27, was taken into custody earlier this month on 4 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse as a person in a position of trust or authority. The charges allege that between May 1st and October 11th, 2024, Ritchie committed an act of sexual conduct with a victim who was between the ages of 13 and 17. A grand jury returned the indictment last week on the 4 counts, each of which is a Class 1 felony. Ritchie entered his plea before Judge Mark Goodwin, who set a pretrial hearing for September 21st. Ritchie's attorney, Jamie Props, told the court that there will be a significant amount of discovery in the case. According to Danville Police, an investigation into Ritchie remains ongoing. The next headline reads, actually, let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next few days. Today, 88, mostly sunny, a 50% chance of morning showers and thunderstorms. West winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Overnight mostly clear, northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, cooler. The high will be 77, the low is 64. Sunny, north winds around 10 miles per hour, overnight mostly clear. Thursday, the high will be 78, the low is 55, mostly sunny. Friday, it will be partly cloudy. The high is 79, the low is 59. By Saturday, it will be 85. That's the high, the low is 61, and it will be mostly sunny. So slightly cooler temperatures this week. As a quick note, everything that I've read so far, these stories contain original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you're not a subscriber, please consider becoming one because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us to connect our community. The News Gazette is a daily newspaper operated by CIMG, or Central Illinois Multimedia Group, Post Office Box 677, Champaign, Illinois, 61824-0677. Jim Rosso is the Vice President of News. Jeff D'Alessio is the editor, and Nico Dugan is the managing editor of the News Gazette. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. I'll be back shortly, and we'll read part two of the News Gazette for this day. Thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to read with you, and I hope you have a wonderful day.